can't remember how I was going to introduce it.
Hello, yeah. Welcome to Bad Voltage.
Friends and enemies to season 2 episode 59 of Bad Jeez. Voltage, which we're doing as a special outside broadcast. Is that what they're called? This is not my field.
I'm still curious why we have enemies. What happened here?
Have you not listened to the show?
We definitely have.
I in fact have not.
So with me are Jono and Jeremy, who are on location. Tell us where you are, chaps.
Yeah, we are. We're actually in Lyon in France right now, and we're in the same room, which is why it sounds all echoey and weird. It's because A, we're in the same room and we're sharing one microphone, and B, this room is stupid and it's made of wood. So we're basically recording inside of a sauna right now. So
it is quite hot, and I suspect we now have more enemies, so great.
Yeah. So there you go. Anyway, so what do you want to talk about?
Well, a few things I want to cover during this show, really. I want to talk about Facebook, and I want to talk about AI in job interviews, and I want to talk about Disney.
All right, brilliant. All of these things are good. Why don't we talk about Facebook first, right? So do you want to provide an overview of what went down in the latest saga of Facebook drama?
Well, yes. Choosing from one of the 400 current Facebook drama stories, let's look at Facebook News. What they've said is that the Facebook news feed is a place where everyone can have their say, and there is no editorial oversight or anything like that. But now they want a separate tab, essentially, inside the Facebook UI for what they call high-quality journalism, right?
Right.
Which is going to be actual journalists, actual news organizations, not just anybody. And it's apparently all going to be very objective and very carefully curated and only work with trusted sources. Facebook are paying, in some cases, millions of dollars to these news organizations in order to feature their journalism in this Facebook News tab. The links inside that tab will, in general, go off to that news organization's website rather than stealing all of their stuff and embedding it inside Facebook like Instant Articles did. And so that all sounds like the sort of thing we would approve, in my opinion. We've talked in the past about how we want to support high quality journalism and so on. However, Facebook's list of trusted news sources includes some that people are not confident are high quality, and the biggest one of those is Breitbart.
Right.
Which has been Wikipedia declared it an unreliable source for citations. Steve Bannon himself called it a platform for the white nationalist alt-right, so on and so forth. It's been repeatedly criticised for inaccurate reporting and incendiary reporting. And so there's a bunch of questions have gone back to Zuckerberg about why the hell do they belong in Facebook News? And when Zuckerberg said this is dedicated to high quality and curated news, and then when he's been confronted with questions about organisations like Breitbart, his pushback has been, no, we need a diversity of views in there. So the argument once again has come up, does diversity mean you include the Wall Street Journal? So, yes, you want conservative-leaning viewpoints in there, you want liberal-leaning viewpoints in there, you want centrist viewpoints in there, but are there some news or supposedly news organisations which aren't actually news at all? Question mark.
Right.
And I'm interested in your thoughts.
So, I have a few thoughts on this. One is, dialing it back, and we could honestly spend a whole show on this, which is this something that Facebook should be doing? Which is not necessarily what we want to discuss today.
Is Facebook News as a whole something that Facebook should be doing?
Yeah, like, is it this something that they should even be focusing on? Because clearly some of this is clawing back the damage to their reputation from what went down with Cambridge Analytica and all that kind of stuff.
Allowing false political ads right. to run without pulling them back, which is more basic right. than the Cambridge Analytica thing, so on and so forth, yes.
And I get the impression they're basically taking on as a goal trying to maintain accurate and healthy discourse in their platform. It sounds like that's the overall goal. Like, I noticed, for example, a person who I'm connected to on Facebook, who shall remain nameless, posted a link to a article which was some, you know, fear-mongering article about politics in the US, and Facebook put underneath it basically a fact check that identified that that article wasn't true, which I thought was really cool. And to me, that makes a lot of sense for Facebook to do it. But this sounds more like a news aggregator, right? That they're basically setting up blog lines inside of
various... Wow, blog lines.
You like that?
Wow, Polylock, yeah. It's 1991.
We'll talk about Delicious later. Don't worry.
Right. So, I don't know whether this A is necessarily something that they should be doing, but I admire the fact that they're trying to do it. The question then is, like, what do you define as a credible news source? I was actually trying to look at, while you were chatting, Ak, what the list of news sources was. Do you have a list?
I haven't been able to find the list. Bloomberg, right. who broke the original article, have presumably seen it, as have other journalists, and maybe it's out there somewhere, but they're talking about 200 or so.
Right.
News partners. The Verge haven't seen it and explicitly say Facebook haven't released a full list of news partners, but presumably some people have seen it. Otherwise, how does anyone know what's on it, right?
Yeah, and then the question is, like, what do you define as a news source? Right? Because there's no... I mean, we all know that Breitbart is a right-leaning news source, right? There's no doubt about it.
Yeah...
He was explicitly act about that, though, right? And he said that he wanted a diversity of opinions.
Yeah. So if he wants a diversity of opinions, having Breitbart on makes sense. I guess the question that some people...
I disagree. You don't want it to only be one side of the news, absolutely. So the list also includes the National Review and the Washington Times. It includes Fox News. Right. Includes the Wall Street Journal. It's not missing conservative-leaning news sources. The question is...
I think what you want is a diversity of news that is factually correctly reported.
Yeah, exactly. Point, and I get that.
At what point do you cease to be a news source? Can anyone just go, we're a news source, even if they've been repeatedly pointed out as being inaccurate, biased, incendiary... Wikipedia have banned them, so on and so forth. I feel exactly the same way about
kind
the
of
socialist
tease out,
work.
Though, so even the best researched news agencies sometimes have inaccuracies.
Yeah.
But it's whether they are systemically,
exactly.
intentionally inaccurate to you know, help with their own biases, or if they just make a mistake. And I think even traditionally reputable organizations, let's take Bloomberg as an example because it was brought up, I think in the rush to create news quickly and be the first to report, there's a lot of things now that people have to walk back or issue retractions on. And for every person that reads the retraction, for every person that reads an article, a very small percentage are going to read the retraction.
Yeah, and often the retraction's on like page 12.
Yeah.
Right. So,
a few times people have attempted to bring in, voluntary self-regulation, which says... that a retraction has to be printed in the same place and at the same size as the original article. And not surprisingly, news organisations have pushed back really quite hard on this and said, we're not doing that.
Well, that's kind of my thing here is, I mean, look, Breitbart, you know what you're getting with Breitbart, right? It's a far-right conservative news source, and I don't read Breitbart, but from what I understand, it's been known to... I'm not sure whether it's so much just completely fabricate things or take things so far out of context that they're just not accurately reported in any way, shape or form, is from what I understand a lot of it there. And we see a lot of this crap shared on chain emails and on Facebook and elsewhere. But there are also other news sources. That's why I wanted to see the list, because I'm almost certain that there's going to be other news sources that could be as like guilty of this as well. Like, as an example, I used to read CNN as my primary source of news, and I've been very disappointed to see how their reporting's gone on in the last 3 or 4 years. It's just they only ever show one side of the viewpoint, and they misrepresent various viewpoints significantly. So are CNN on that list? Like, we all know that Fox News is far right. We all know that MSNBC is very left-leaning. I'm just curious to see what other ones are. But I think the way Jeremy said it makes sense. Like, is there systematic inaccuracy and misrepresentation? And if there is, then they shouldn't be on the list. And yeah. Breitbart is probably in that category, right?
As far as I'm aware, there is no guideline about how far you have to push it before you stop being a reputable news source, right? And putting that list together would be almost impossible, because you get nothing but accusations of partisanship for doing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this, to some extent, this seems like something Facebook could have taken a lead on, right? Rather than just saying, oh, it's not our job to decide which are reputable news sources and which aren't, you go, well, it isn't really your job to produce the news at all, is it? It's exactly as you said, John, right at the beginning, why are they even doing Facebook News? So if they are doing that, they had a chance, I feel like, here to make a difference rather than to reflect the problem to a wider audience.
Right. Well, the thing is, as well, as When I saw the news about Breitbart, people complaining about Breitbart, the first thing that struck me, honestly, was, are people complaining because it's right-wing news, right? Or are people complaining because it is systematically inaccurate news that is included in this trusted or this credible sources list? And there is a lot of noise right now about...
People who are complaining about Breitbart specifically. They're not complaining about the inclusion of right-leaning news sources, right?
Right.
There are a bunch of others in the list which are right. I mean, Fox News is in there, right? And I don't think anyone even remotely credible is saying Fox News shouldn't be included at all. They might have a problem with the way Fox News goes about their reporting and the stories they choose to feature, but the mirror image of that person would have exactly the same problem about CNN, for example. But I don't think anyone is suggesting that Fox News shouldn't be in the list at all.
Right.
And a lot of people are saying that about Breitbart. This is the point. If there is some kind of dividing, like where you're no longer a news source and you're just there to incite riots, it's probably in between Fox News and Breitbart. And Facebook could have said, we're drawing a line. These people aren't included because they're too far out. And they didn't do that.
I get the impression that the critics of Breitbart is one of the reasons why they differentiate between criticizing Breitbart and Fox News is, I think there are a number of people out there who think Breitbart is very specifically a white supremacy... Like, it's not just conservative. Like, you get Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, opinion hosts on Fox News, but I think a lot of people think that Breitbart goes a step too far.
Yes.
And again, I've never really read Breitbart, so I don't really know what kind of material they have on there. The only time I ever read anything on there is when people are complaining about something that's been published on there. So I don't know, but.
But I mean, I think Facebook here would need some line that isn't capricious, right? They need to say X percentage of your posts need to be proven inaccurate to be removed. They can't, now that they've allowed them in, they can't just remove them, or the pushback will be even stronger than not including them in the first place.
Yeah.
But I'm also a little bit confused, is not the right word, but it's not clear to me what Facebook's motivations here are.
Right.
Like, I almost think they want things like Breitbart on their platform because outrage clearly drives engagement and eyeballs and clicks and views, and that's how Facebook is monetized. So while they say they don't want this stuff, I'm almost positive that they actually do.
That's a really interesting point, that we all talk about outrage culture and cancel culture, and we all talk about it, well, we talk about it in mixed settings, right? So in some cases, people say, yes, well, you need you need cancel culture or outrage culture, because that's an effective tool where other tools have not worked to deal with something, right? But I would be curious to know what the internal view at Facebook is about that. Because I think a lot of people talk about outrage culture as if this is a very unhealthy element of our national discourse or international discourse, which I think in some cases is true, and in some cases it's not.
It is. But, it is outrage culture, and it is an unhealthy part of the process, but it's an extremely monetizable part of the process.
Yeah. Yes. So I wonder, I'd be curious to see whether internally at Facebook, whether there is a view of like, well, actually, this is what we want. Whether it's under some kind of veil of enthusiastic discourse.
Yeah, I don't think... this feels like one of those things where everyone around the table knows what they're talking about, but no one is prepared to write down on a piece of paper, we like making people angry and sad because it makes money for us, and then sign their name underneath.
I'm guessing, like anything, there is no singular opinion. It's going to be some people saying this drives engagement, this is what we want, and there's going to be some people saying this is not the right thing to do.
Well, and then where do you draw that line, right? Because YouTube, I think it was, when do you remember the while back there was that whole thing about was it videos designed for kids, and there was like
was YouTube,
some messed up shit in those videos, and advertisers pulled away from it, right? And they weren't advertising because they didn't want to be associated with that. And I'd be curious to see what are the advertising trends with Facebook right now, because Facebook consistently has been one of the most effective platforms for online advertising, and whether this kind of outrage culture and the stink with all the Russian stuff, whether that would play a role in this as well, because it's a fine line between getting eyeballs to your site because of the outrage and then actually having a place that people want to advertise, because it's, if you take it too far, you turn into 4chan, and I don't think people advertise on 4chan.
But this is exactly the point. What you're calling outrage culture is at least partially the only tool the public have to affect the direction of a firm like Facebook.
Right.
You know, so if you want to get Facebook to listen, the way to do it is to make a bunch of noise so advertisers hear it, so advertisers stop advertising, so Facebook listen.
Right. So what do we think is going to happen next with this then? Do we think do you think they'll remove Breitbart based upon public scrutiny?
No. I do not. I think they'll keep saying, oh no, we need to reflect a diversity of opinion. And not do anything about it.
Do you think they should remove Breitbart, though?
I would very much like to see Facebook take a stand for professional, good quality journalism, and take that stand by enshrining what that means to them, defining that kind of code of conduct, essentially, and saying, this is what you get to do to be in Facebook News. They have said, now I've got to actually find the description. They've said outright misinformation will be banned on Facebook News. If a publisher posts misinformation, it will no longer appear in the product. So in theory...
It the post or it the publication?
Say again?
It the post or it the publication?
It's not clear.
That sentence is not clear at all.
It says, if a publisher posts misinformation, it will no longer appear in the product. The only noun in there is publisher. So presumably, if you repeatedly post
misinformation?
Incorrect, insightful articles, inciting articles, not insightful.
insightful misinformation?
Well, they're spelled differently, but... Well, okay, that's weird. Things that incite anger, then in theory you will be removed from Facebook News. It'd be interesting to see whether that happens and what their threshold for misinformation is.
But that, like, that would remove it from inside of the news tab, right?
Yeah.
What I want them to work on personally is not this. What I want them to do is to remove, like... what we know is factually incorrect material from people's timelines.
Yeah, but they're absolutely like, not going to do that.
So they're absolutely not going to do that. But even on the news tab, is that economically viable?
For them to remove it?
Well, for them to fact check it. Well, because the first time they remove something for being factually incorrect that turns out to be correct, like, the whole system will come tumbling
right.
down. So.
And I'm sure that would happen from time to time. But, like, I'm a big believer in free speech. And I think yep. people should be able to post whatever they want on their timeline within reason, as long as it's not hateful, racist, violent shit. But if someone posts something that is factually proven to be incorrect, such as somebody posting a quote that somebody didn't say, right, then I don't see any particular reason why Facebook shouldn't remove that. Like, we're not talking about the government here. We're talking about a private service. And I think if I was Zuckerberg, God, I feel thirsty just talking about being him. I would set the policy of, like, if we're going to deal with this properly, then we need to detect for misinformation on the platform and remove it. Like, a lot of the kind of stuff that chainmail email that comes through is...
Should Google check your Gmail for misinformation?
And no. Enforcing this is almost impossible. Is climate change real?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes it is, right?
I'm not saying that this isn't difficult and that you could remove all information, but I think they're already doing this to a degree. They're outlining, like I said, the example I made earlier on. They said there was a fact check on this particular article and it was proven to be false. Essentially kind of like a Snopes type thing, right? Yeah. But they still allowed that article on someone's timeline. I think if you allow people to do that, you're allowing people to spread bullshit.
Yeah.
I take a fairly strong view on this, because I think spreading misinformation is wrong. Sharing controversial opinions, sharing challenging opinions, no problem.
I think this is a great idea. How are you going to enforce it? And more importantly, who decides on the fact check stuff? I mean, Someone posting an Abraham Lincoln quote which isn't actually from Abraham Lincoln? Yeah, I mean, this is a terrible spread of misinformation and people should pack it in, but... Do you honestly want a world where they go, yeah, okay, we've decided climate change is not real? Because you can certainly find people who say it isn't real.
Of course, and there's going to be some... And there's going to be some people... Look, you're going to have to take a position on some of this.
Yes, and Facebook have religiously avoided taking a political position on anything. Instead, hiding behind, we don't take positions, we just do what the people want.
Right. Right,
and that's exactly the problem. We want them to take a political position on stuff, and they will not do so.
I don't want them to take a political position. I want them to take a factual position. I'm not saying that... You see, the climate change thing is a good example, right?
Yep.
There is a mountain of scientific evidence out there that states that climate change is a very real threat to people, right?
Yep.
And there are people out there who claim that it isn't real, okay?
Yep.
Now, if as an example, using that as an example... If somebody posted a fact or a statistic I'm not denying that this is a really hard problem to solve, right? But I believe that we can train computers to basically help with fact checking in an objective way. And even if it gets us 5% better, it's worth it. There was just some, like, someone post a quote that Obama apparently said, something to do with Muslims, right? Basically, it made it sound like Obama was taking the side of Muslims in some particular situation that sounded very, very negative, in like a violent situation. And the quote came from his book, and it was misquoted. That should be removed. It's bullshit. He didn't say that. You know, or for example, when people play videos and it splices together two different bits of video from the same speech. Again, people have accused Obama of doing that. And that, to me, is something I think you can reasonably train computers to help with this. All of this waffle about AI and ML, we should be able to use it towards some of this.
Well, that leads us quite neatly onto our next topic, perhaps.
Indeed. It is a poor mobility device.
Smooth segue.
That was a very deft segue. No one rides segues anymore, man. It's all hoverboards now, or them little rolly single wheel things, or scooters. Or
scooters. Bloody scooters.
Can they make like Lyft or Lime or Light or something like that? Anyway.
Sync, Bird, there's quite a few of them.
There's a lot of them, yeah. Yeah. Have you ridden a scooter around Birmingham?
I have not, although I have seen people do it. I was in Warsaw 2-3 weeks ago. And
Walsall?
Warsaw in Poland, not Walsall, the place near Birmingham.
Okay.
There were shed loads of people on little electric scooters.
I rode one as recently as last night.
Tons of people.
Did you ride one last night? Did you ride one to the pub last night?
Yeah.
I want to see you careering down a hill on a scooter. Anyway,
that sounds delightful.
We've spent this entire segue talking about scooters.
So. Well, maybe we should talk about scooters. Pencil in for a future episode.
Let's complete the segue.
So, another thing then. So, this is about AI, and specifically Unilever, who are a... Unilever are gargantuan multinational chemical beauty products.
Dishwasher tablet maker.
Dishwasher tablet. They make everything, right? And apparently, they're claiming they've saved hundreds of thousands of pounds a year by replacing human recruiters with an artificial intelligence system, which scans graduate candidates' facial expressions, body language, and word choice, and then checks them against traits that are considered to be predictive of job success. Do we think this is A, good idea, or B, the worst thing to come down the pike since Pet Rocks?
So I imagine that when they were trying to build this incredibly challenging recruitment technology, they wrote, send LinkedIn invite. If invite accepted, send direct message to person offering job.
No. I don't want to
simplify what recruiters do.
This is videoing people.
I know. So this is from what I understood from the article, it's basically they're videoing interviews, and then they're using this to process the video and to look for keywords and patterns and whatever else, right? Is that correct?
Well, it says facial expressions, body language, and word choice. So this plays quite neatly into the discussions we've had about facial recognition before. Like, if you decide to train your "these people are good at the job" system on all your white staff and then point it at other people, it tends not to work that well. But more generally, there's... if you go out and poll people about this, about the idea of automated decision-making, this kind of thing, everyone in the real world doesn't like it at all. Everyone's really kind of... If the question is put to...
Is Unilever not in the real world?
The question is put to a person on the street, do you think this is okay? The answer is almost always no.
But hang on a second.
But then
there's
the question,
do
we care about that?
Didn't I read in that article that something like 60% of companies that are using this technology found it very useful?
I haven't seen that statistic.
I read that somewhere when I was researching this.
Okay,
so
I mean, certainly,
I'm not denying the fact that people on the street think this. I mean, who possibly would want this if you're going for a job?
Yes.
Of course you want it.
So I think the most interesting thing about the article was, and I'll just read it so it's factually correct.
Nah.
Also, I'll take this time to remind you, please support journalism. Very important.
Yeah, I agree. So we can be in the Facebook sources list.
This says, the video interviews are optional and candidates are asked to allow or disallow automated decision-making being evaluated on their video, and they're sent information beforehand. I cannot believe that this many people opted into this. I think that's the most surprising thing. I think it's, generally speaking, not a good idea. I think if they saved hundreds of thousands of pounds for a company that has 155,000 employees, like, they spend more money than that on paper plates. Recruiting is such an important part of doing business, right? In the end, every company, regardless of what you do, you're a recruiting company.
Yeah.
Right? Recruiting is so critical to your success. To save a couple hundred thousand pounds to make decisions on the future of your company at such a systemic level is, I think, objectively a bad idea.
Can I offer a devil's advocate question, though?
I don't think the devil needs any fucking advocates in 2019, to be honest with you.
He's got quite a few, hasn't he?
Seriously, how about advocating for not the devil?
We all know that any recruitment process is biased, right? Yeah. Human beings are biased. And we've become increasingly aware of the role of unconscious bias, right? Which I think is a very real thing.
Yep.
Could this software be a tool to mitigate against unconscious bias?
Not.
So I think reading the article, this is not AI at all. It's ML. And ML is only as unbiased as what you feed it. And as you said, humans are biased.
Right.
That's
a very good point.
I think every time... someone's tried to build an ML system and say, no, it's not biased. It turns out that it's just as hard to feed it unbiased training data as it is to be unbiased in the first place. There are a bunch of techniques to deal with, or at least help to mitigate the issues of bias and unconscious bias in things like job interviewing, the same way there are in things like interviewing people in your call for papers for your conference, right? But they involve blinded tests and removing personal information and so on. What they don't involve is having a Python script which you train do it for you and then going, oh, it's AI, right? Especially if you think about it, you know how certainly when I was a graduate, if I was told one of the things you can always do is if you don't get a job, ask the company for some feedback as to why not. You won't necessarily get anything incredibly relevant, but they might tell you something. But what are they going to say if this comes up? They're just going to say, yeah, the computer said didn't like your face, so no job for you.
Computer says no.
Right, exactly. Is this the world we want to build? Because I'm sure even Unilever have no idea why their algorithm said no. Or HireVue, which is the company.
So we haven't done an interview in a while. Actually, Unilever does not write the software. They're outsourcing to a company HireVue.
Called Cryogenics Consulting.
Thank you
very
much.
It would be interesting to have an engineer from HireVue on to kind of explain why they think this is a good idea.
I think it'd be interesting. I would be very interested to see an example video of an interview and the kind of thing that the software would say.
So it said it looks for things like passive voice versus active voice, facial expressions. It specifically mentioned furled brow. Is that a negative signal? A positive signal?
It also smiles and eye widening are apparently things they look at, although quite whether having wide eyes occasionally in an interview is an indicator that you'll be CEO one day or that you shouldn't be allowed in the door is unclear.
Well, and it all massively depends.
We really like your experience and your Python programming is excellent. You did great on the algorithm exam, but you furled your brow 18 minutes and 33 seconds in. It's going to have to be a hard no.
The context here as well, because around like what you're talking about, the body language in the room is all going to affect that, isn't it? Like, I'm sure I fill my brow all of the time, but I'd probably do it in perfectly reasonable situations.
Nah, but it turns out you're unconsciously rubbish, and so we shouldn't employ you. This is one step removed from phrenology, right? We start measuring people's skulls and going, oh no, you've got a bulge here, it means you're a criminal. It's ridiculous.
It is a little Minority Report.
Although people with ginger hair generally shouldn't be trusted. We all know that.
We're the best.
The sad voice.
We mention enemies in the intro, and you're just
what I like
bent
is,
on creating that.
I've got someone having a go at my hair, who is in.
Okay.
Hang on, let me just squint. Can I see any of hair on there?
So moving on.
Moving swiftly on then. So,
although we did go to Akanai on Friday night, went to a bar in Birmingham where apparently, 70% of the patrons had red hair.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. It was the land of the ginger. Anyway, what's next?
That was weird. Completely accidental. So the other thing is, this is a slightly weird one because I don't know how true this is. And it's a field that I know very little about. So I'd be interested in, after you two looked into it, whether you had any thoughts that I didn't. But so, if you run a cinema, you have to talk to film distributors to say, I want to show this film, and then they say yes or no, right?
Right.
Which I sort of assumed was the case, but never really thought about it.
Mm.
Now, for basically forever, it's been very hard or impossible to get hold of old Disney films. Mm. And this is not the ones that they want to make disappear from history, like the Song of the South or whatever, right? This is things like Fantasia that you can't get a hold of either.
Right.
Okay? But recently, Disney bought Fox, 21st Century Fox, right?
Yep.
And so now we're apparently seeing that if you are a cinema, you're now finding it difficult or impossible to get hold of old Fox films as well. right? And I thought, well, you know, well, this is all going to be ancient stuff from the 1940s or whatever. But on the list of stuff that you will now find it difficult or impossible to show are Aliens, The Princess Bride, Moulin Rouge, The Fly, The Omen. These are all films where you think, but they're quite famous and people want to show them a lot, right? So this is not obscure, weird back title stuff. Alien is really famous. Fight Club, right?
Yeah.
And I don't really understand.
By the way, the idea that Disney owns Fight Club is hilarious.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I
mean,
the thing is that I don't really understand what the point of this is. Why they do it. I mean, why is it a...
Oh, so it's a very intentional thing that Disney specifically has done, and I think... when applied to the Disney catalog, while I don't personally agree with the decision, I think it's something they've chosen to do as a business. And they create artificial scarcity for things. And you mentioned Fantasia. That's probably their most famous example of this. Every 10 years or so, they re-release it with a whole new remastering and all that stuff. And it's highly anticipated. It gets a ton of press. It makes a ton of sales. And it's that artificial scarcity that creates that. So when applied to Fantasia, like I said, disagree with it, but get it. When applied to Fight Club, it makes no sense.
But when you say artificial scarcity, you mean it's just not available.
It's not on TV.
Right. You can't get it on streaming services.
It's not in theaters. You can't. They don't really even sell the DVDs during that time period. So it's just it creates a buzz when a decade later it's released and they do all this press release.
And I'm sure,
it's a well-known Disney marketing thing.
This may be one of those things where. Up until now, this kind of thing was happening, but I wasn't really that worried because I don't really care that much about Pinocchio. But then suddenly it applies to Die Hard, and I'm like, what? That's not allowed. That's terrible. But
I guess the other potential here could be is that they're starting to pull it in anticipation of putting it on either Hulu or Disney Plus,
which they both own
now.
Service.
I would have thought that was going to be it. They're just going to stick all of this stuff on their own network. I don't know. It seems silly, but I also get why. Look, at the end of the day, they own the catalog, so they can do what they want, really. And if they can figure out ways of squeezing money out of a 30-year-old movie and re-releasing it, if anyone can figure out a way of squeezing money out of anything, it's Disney. I don't know. I mean, I'll be curious to see how this all what this all means for their network because they're I don't know.
Yeah,
what do you think, Langridge?
I knew nothing about this. It just seems, I don't know, I mean, the kind of open source bit of me resents this whole sort of behaviour, you know, creating artificial scarcity for a thing which came out when I was 8 seems a bit unreasonable. But as you say, maybe there's nothing, if you're going to allow Disney to go and buy Fox, then this sort of thing's got to be permitted, right?
It would be interesting if you think about it. Imagine if there was a rule that basically said that when a movie gets so old, it essentially enters into the public domain.
What a good idea that would be! Why don't we have? Oh no, wait. We've got that rule. Just the so old is now what, 85 years?
So if nothing changes, the original Mickey Mouse will be public domain in 2023.
Right, but
because they keep extending it.
I was going to say
it got declined last time. So we'll see.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. When you say if nothing changes, I got a fiver says something changes.
Something changes.
I suspect that Mickey Mouse is going to get a jetpack.
But yeah, no, it's just I thought this was interesting because it seems akin to the kind of arguments and conversations and fights we have inside the open source world, but in a completely different sphere.
Well, and
I don't know whether that's why the story appealed to me or what, but we'll look to it in the show notes anyway.
Scarcity is less of a thing. Certainly within pure open source, it's not a thing at all, is it? Because it's you can get as much open source as you want, but it definitely plays a role when it comes to things like open core, where you have a product that if you want it, you have to pay for it, and it adds that level of scarcity into it. But yeah, scarcity really isn't a tool in the open source world, I don't think. I mean, you may have scarcity of tickets for an event that people want to be at, for example, but... within pure open source projects, I mean, it kind of open source naturally combats against that because it's, you know, it can grow to as big as it wants to be, right?
So. Yeah, true. And Mickey Mouse having been an early film prevents basically all of cinema from entering into the public domain.
Not one to exaggerate.
It's the truth, man. Find a counterexample. But yeah, so the only other thing I wanted to ask about was,
yes,
what's the deal with Open Source Summit? I mean, you're there in France.
We are.
How's it going? Tell us about it.
We're in Lyon. Apparently the French don't like air conditioning, is the first thing we've discovered about this trip. It's bloody hot everywhere. What do you think, Jeremy? It's been a pretty good event, hasn't it?
It's been good, yeah.
So, for people who are unfamiliar with this, this is the Linux Foundation event, and it happens in North America, Europe, and Asia each year. And it's just a whole bunch of speakers. My good lady, Erica, gave one of the keynotes, and she did that this morning, and it went very well. I did a talk. Is Alan speaking? No, Alan and Jeremy were not speaking. Language couldn't be bothered to come over because he's lazy. It's been a pretty good event so far. So, and we go home tomorrow. I go home tomorrow, yeah. You're going, right?
I must admit, I saw some quite nice reviews of Erica's keynote this morning.
Yeah, she did a great job.
It's quite good.
So, I love this event. And what I personally like is, it's a completely different audience, because we go to a lot of events in America and it's the same crowd over and over again. On day one, Jim Zemlin, the executive director of the Linux Foundation, asked how many people in the audience were new, and like 70% of the people put their hands up.
Yeah, it's a substantial portion.
So, yeah, it was pretty big. So
the reason I like this event and always have is there's not a density of other folks that run open source programs offices at any other event. So it's just a great way to keep touch with what other companies are doing with open source, how they're handling compliance and all that kind of stuff. Which
the hallway track is always good. The expo hall was good. So yeah, I'd recommend it. Well, I think that's it, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, Mr. Langridge, it was a pleasure seeing you from afar. lazy shit not coming to Lyon.
I wasn't invited.
You're always invited.
Not by you.
oh, that's different.
But yes, go back and enjoy France. Listeners, go away and enjoy the next 2 weeks, and we will talk to you in a fortnight.
See you soon.